It's Encounter on the Voice of America. Encounter on the Voice of America brings together advocates and opponents debating the critical issues of our time in a freewheeling, no-holds-barred discussion of fact and opinion. With today's guests and the topic for Encounter, here is Carol Castiel.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America. On this edition of the program, A Copa do Mundo, O Jogo Bonito, World Cup 2014 in Brazil. Hello again, I'm Carol Castiel. As the World Cup enters the second round, or round of 16, we examine both the performance and politics of the Jogo Bonito in Brazil. Exactly 1 year ago this month, Brazil was rocked by protests against wasteful government spending and corruption. What started out as demonstrations against proposed transportation fare hikes escalated into widespread anger over high taxes, poor public services, and you guessed it, extravagant spending for the World Cup. Before the games got underway earlier in June, protests threatened the opening, and now that it's underway, the jubilant atmosphere belies an undercurrent of deep dissatisfaction among much of the population. The government spent more than $11 billion building the infrastructure for the games, and apparently the spending has not yielded the promised infrastructure. Well, for more on the politics of World Cup 2014, we turn to Paulo Sotero. He's a native Brazilian and director of the Brazil Institute at the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars, and that's a policy group based here in Washington. And for a more sporty perspective, we turn to Sonny Young, host of VOA's Sunny Side of Sports show. And both gentlemen join me here at the VOA Broadcast Center in Washington. Bem-vindo ao programa, and welcome to you both.
Thank you very much, Carol.
Carol, thank you. It's a pleasure to be with you.
And Paulo Sotero, let me begin with you. To set the scene for us, we're halfway through the games, and 1 year ago this month, we commemorate the protests that erupted over increase in bus and subway fares and the neglect of public services and, of course, the extravagant spending for the World Cup, the lack of accountability. We don't see too much of that on the television screens, but what's going on? Talk about to what extent protests still continue behind the scenes.
Well, they have continued. There have been about 50 episodes of protests since the World Cup started. They are very small. They don't resonate with society right now because, well, people are focused on following the games, and they are fun. Actually, it has been a very good World Cup, full of goals, which is what matters. The stadiums, it was very clear from before the time it started that the stadiums would be ready, and the basic things that needed to be ready would be ready. I can see right now, I think Brazilians are very happy to welcome tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of foreigners that are in Brazil following their teams. I think that the tourists, the visitors also, are enjoying very much their time in Brazil, and that has created, along with the games and the tournament, a very positive atmosphere about soccer, football, as we call it, is a party. You know, we love the stuff. And as you also know, Carol, we know how to throw a party in Brazil. So this is the moment, and we have another 2.5 weeks of this.
President Dilma Rousseff, how was she received? I was under the impression that she was supposed to speak at the beginning, but she was booed. Talk about that particular
instance. No, she was there. She was not supposed to speak. They had decided months ago that there was not going to be speeches. And there was booing, etc. Actually, there was insult to the president, which is obviously not acceptable. It was a very sad moment. And I believe that regardless of what happens during the World Cup, politicians, and not only Brazilians, any politicians that show up in a soccer game runs a great risk of being booed. So that is the episode. It was, I think it's very regrettable what happened as far as the booing, the president, insulting, calling names. But that is over, and people are now focused on the tournament and the joy it has been.
Well, we'll talk more about the politics and the political fallout in a moment. But let me turn to Sonny Young. Sonny, for who's up, who's down, surprises and other incidents of note, particularly for our African listeners, the teams that are going into the second round.
Well, African football has some of the best nicknames in the world, Carol, and I want to give a shout out for the Desert Foxes from Algeria and the Super Eagles from Nigeria. It marks the first time that two African teams have reached the round of 16 at the World Cup. Three times previously, an African team has made it to the quarterfinals. Cameroon was the first to do it at the 1990 tournament. Senegal made it to the quarterfinals in Japan and South Korea in 2002. And at the last World Cup in South Africa, the Black Stars of Ghana made it to the quarterfinals. I don't know if the Super Eagles and the Desert Foxes have enough quality to make it to the quarterfinals. If we look at their next opponents, the Nigerians go up against the French on Monday, and the Algerians have a very tough test. They take on the German machine. Mm. Germany is rated one of the favorites for the trophy in Brazil, along with the host country. Argentina has to be considered a favorite with Lionel Messi. And as we head into the second round of the tournament, I should mention that Messi, Neymar from Brazil, and the German, Thomas Müller, they are the leading goal scorers at the tournament. They each have four goals each. And as Paolo mentioned, there have been some wonderful goals already in the tournament. I would like to single out one in particular, Robin van Persie from the Netherlands. He had a spectacular flying header against Spain from long distance. It was a beautiful shot. That, for me, has been one of the highlights so far. Low lights.
Okay.
He did it against a Spanish team that went home with its kind of their heads between their legs. They were quickly eliminated from the tournament, and it brought back memories of the French. They were the defending champions going into Japan, South Korea in 2002. They had a lousy World Cup, but they also exited quickly. So Spain has to be considered one of the disappointments at the tournament. Surprises? Costa Rica. Los Ticos. They were rated one of the big underdogs going into this tournament. They have reached the second round. The Greeks are in the second round for the first time ever. We salute the Greeks. And yes, those are a few of the surprise teams so far.
And Team USA.
I think they have to be considered one of the surprise teams. They were in a very difficult first round group. As soccer pundits like to describe it, the group of death, or perhaps the most competitive group in Brazil. It was Group G. The Americans were grouped with Germany, Portugal, and Ghana. And they came through that group along with the Germans to make it to the second round. Paolo was talking about the tourists that are in Brazil for the World Cup. The Americans, I think, have one of the largest contingents in Brazil. An estimated 125,000 Americans have traveled to Brazil to watch the matches.
That should boost some tourism. And I want to pick up on that. Back to you, Paulo Sotero. Talk about what you think are the long-term economic benefits of the Copa do Mundo. Jobs, do you see the infrastructure buttressing a more robust economy? Talk about some positives that could emerge from this tourism, increased tourism. Will some of the drawbacks or the criticisms against the extravagant spending be mitigated by the benefits?
Some of the public works that have started, some have not been completed, especially in the mass transit area. Those will be completed eventually, okay? So this is clearly a benefit. A lot of the benefit already happened, you know, in the renovation and the construction of stadiums. Obviously, there were lots of business done, salaries paid. Obviously, the influx of tourists in Brazil, I don't think that there was ever such a tremendous presence of tourists in Brazil at one time. Brazil is a spectacularly beautiful country and has a tremendously welcoming people. Brazilians really are very special in the way we are, and we like to party, we like to receive people. So I think that also many people will tell their friends, you know, you should go to Brazil, we had a great time. In terms of the long-term benefit, one would think that with the World Cup, the Brazilian economy should be in a much better place than it is now. The economy of Brazil was clear before the World Cup, and it's at a very low rate of growth. Some people in Brazil say that it's probably stagnating at this point, and this will be a major issue going forward. President Dilma Rousseff has been trying since she became president in 2011 to make this economy go to a sustainable 4% GDP expansion per year. Has not been able to do so. There is the reasons for that. There are discussions. Some people in Brazil and the government side believes this has to do more with international conditions, the consequences of the 2008 global crisis, the opposition in Brazil, and even some in the government believe that the causes are more domestic. It has to do with the sort of model of development that we had, and there seems to be approaching a point of exhaustion. So this is all going to be debated after the World Cup, because we have another important tournament after the World Cup, which is a political tournament in Brazil called elections. We have the seventh elections in Brazil since the reinstatement of democracy. Brazil is a consolidated democracy. Brazil is a country where we enjoy also the involvement in politics, the political campaign. We will do this for about 2.5 months, and we will elect a president. It could be President Dilma Rousseff herself and being reelected, or there are two alternatives with some possibilities, especially one former governor of Minas Gerais, Aécio Neves. But right now, the picture is the most likely scenario for the reelection of President Dilma Rousseff, the renewal of the totality of the Chamber of Deputies, the House of Representatives in Brazil, a third of the Senate, and the election of all 27 governors, state governors in Brazil.
So what you're saying is that notwithstanding the criticism that Dilma Rousseff has received over the excessive spending, the fact that a lot of the spending on the World Cup should have also gone into social services, etc., that she still has a very good chance that this whole episode isn't going to hurt her politically?
No, it is from this protest last year. Her popularity dropped a lot to the low 30s. She has recovered some, but she has not recovered her popularity to the levels it was before the protests. She has obviously the advantage of incumbency. She has, some say, the advantage of not having strong opposition candidates against her.
I see.
But in terms of the World Cup per se, I think it's important to separate two things. Either Brazil win or lose, the impact of this politically, I think, is going to be limited. We know how to separate soccer from politics. Some people say, oh, if Brazil loses the World Cup, she will lose the election. And nonsense. These are two different things. We know very well what soccer is, and we know what electing a president takes, and she knows that also. So even in terms of the economic impact, it is known, and Sunny knows this very well, those major sports tournaments, normally they turn into a disappointment in terms of what their impact. Brazil is a $2.7 trillion economy. It's not the $10 billion that were spent in this, and this is not all wasted. This went to salaries. There are structures that are there that were not there before.
But what about the waste? There was allegations of a lot of waste and corruption.
Yeah, there is, because some of these was done sort of last minute, so it becomes more expensive. There is no allegation of corruption directly linked to the World Cup sort of works. If someone did something bad, this will come up. This will be investigated after the World Cup. The main sort of questioning, the main criticism, Carol, was that maybe we could have done this in a smaller number of cities or venues. That a common criticism that, for instance, the stadiums in the city of Brasilia, Natal, and Manaus, where there is really not a soccer at a quality that will fill up 40,000, 50,000 seat stadiums. Well, the stadiums now are there, and there is this, concern that those could turn into white elephants. And, mm-hmm. and people are saying, we could maybe have invested more into schools, exactly. into hospitals, et cetera, et cetera. The government is investing in school. The government is investing in hospital. Not only the federal government, state governments are doing that. That discussion will continue. It's a discussion very important about priority in public spending.
We'll have more in just a minute, but first, you're listening to Encounter on the Voice of America. My guests are Paulo Sotero, from whom you just heard. He's director of the Brazil Institute at the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars, and Sunny Young, host of VOA's Sunny Side of Sports show. We're talking about World Cup 2014 as we enter the round of 16 and look forward to the political, economic, and social fallout for Brazil as the country approaches presidential elections in October. This is a reminder that you can listen to Encounter online as a podcast. Please visit our website at voanews.com/encounter. And if you want to hear your name on the show, please send us an email with comments and feedback to encounter@voanews.com. Well, back to you, Sunny Young, for some more color about what's going on at the World Cup. But what are you hearing from some of your colleagues who are covering firsthand? Paulo said, and as we all know, I know personally, having lived there, it's a beautiful country, and it's very welcoming, very diverse. Students from Africa are studying there. What are some of your observations?
Just to pick up on one point that Paulo made in terms of the cost-benefit of the World Cup, and I agree that from my perspective, any major international tournament, I don't see a lasting economic legacy. For instance, the Brazilians built a stadium in Manaus. I think it was at an estimated cost of $300 million. It will stage a total of 4 World Cup matches. And then after that, what becomes of that stadium? A stadium in and of itself is used very infrequently, whether it's in Manaus or here in the Washington area. What is FedEx Field? They might use that stadium maybe 20 times a year maximum. In Beijing at the Olympics, that Bird's Nest Stadium is now used as kind of a tourist attraction. People stop by and they snap photos. I don't really think building these multi-million dollar stadiums is the way to go. That said,
but some of it has to do with FIFA, right? That they have certain standards or requirements, criteria?
Not necessarily. 4 years ago, the South Africans, the approach they used was to renovate existing stadiums. And I think they built 4 or 5 new ones. I think the Brazilians have poured more money into new infrastructure for the World Cup. And I tend to see them as white elephants, as Paulo put it. That said, getting back to the football, the biggest controversy at the tournament has been the Uruguayan star, Luis Suarez, who took a bite of an Italian defender. And as a result, he was suspended for 4 months. And it seems, in terms of my colleagues, we were talking about some of the controversies that take place at a World Cup. And I remember Zinedine Zidane and the headbutt at the 2006 World Cup. The similarity is that they were both taken against an Italian. The headbutt was against an Italian and the bite was against an Italian. So yeah, that's been one of the controversial stories at this World Cup. Suarez, from a playing standpoint, is one of the biggest stars in the world. He led the Premier League in scoring this past year. Terrific striker. However, his on-the-pitch behavior sometimes leaves a lot to be desired. But I've enjoyed the World Cup from afar. It seems like the fans there have really enjoyed it. There have been some new technologies introduced at this World Cup. Goal line technology, which was not used at previous World Cups. They've used it, I think, one or two times so far, and it seems to be very reliable. And they've also used this, I think they describe it as quick-dissolving foam, which the referee will spray on the pitch. And it basically, it's a marker that the defenders cannot pass this line. It's basically a marker for the defenders to line up. And so that's being used. And another interesting development from this World Cup has been occasional water breaks because of
the
heat and the humidity in some of these locations like Manaus in the Amazon region. Very, very hot and humid. And it's not often, but I think it's up to the referee's discretion whether they will allow the teams to maybe take a quick water break to hydrate. So those are some of the newer aspects at this World Cup.
All right. Well, back to Paulo Sotero to talk more about politics. Paulo, we know also that Joe Biden, U.S. Vice President Joe Biden, went to watch the U.S. play, and also in a bid to try to patch things up between the United States and Brazil. We know there have been some tensions over the spying incident. The NSA was spying. This was very upsetting to President Dilma Rousseff, who actually postponed the state visit. Talk about U.S.-Brazil relations in the context of the Games. Do you think they're on the mend?
Oh, yeah, they are. You know, Brazil and the United States are two countries that, or the governments know that they cannot afford sustaining this type of distance. Not that they have been very close, but the expectations, I think, in both countries, that the two largest democracies in the continent are supposed to have a good dialogue. The sad part of this is that due to the revelations, disclosures of the NSA activities in Brazil, what would have been a state visit that could probably have put Brazil-U.S. relations at a new type of level, more strategic nature. That didn't happen, but immediately I think the cooler heads prevailed and they went on to work on mending fences. And the visit by Vice President Joe Biden to Brazil, watch the U.S. team play in the city of Natal, but the next day he flew to Brasilia for a meeting with President Dilma Rousseff. It was not the first. They had already had a very good meeting before, and President Dilma Rousseff actually liked Vice President, who is a very likable man. I once interviewed him. So we are again in a process of restarting this dialogue. It's very important, by the way, for President Dilma Rousseff for two reasons. You know, the Brazilian economy is not doing particularly well right now. And projecting sort of the idea of a good relationship with the United States helps the economy because it helps with investors. It creates an atmosphere where people, oh, Brazil and the United States are sort of in good terms. This helps you sort of in Wall Street and in on Brazilian and international investors. The second thing is that probably the election, upcoming election, will probably be a hard-fought elections where President Dilma Rousseff knows very well that she would be in trouble if she couldn't sort of convince people at the more moderate voters at the center or more to the conservative side of the political spectrum to support her. And having a good relationship with the United States obviously is also a signal, positive signal, to that side of the electorate.
Indeed. So things look like they're on the mend. That's good for the United States too, which is having so many troubles in the Middle East between Syria, Iraq. So to have a better relationship with Brazil.
Yeah, it is advantageous to the United States. The interruption of the process that would have led to the state visit costs American business a lot. It costs $6.5 billion. There was a contract with Boeing for the sale of jet fighters to the Brazilian Air Force. There was a contract between Microsoft that provided services to the Brazilian government, internet services, that was withdrawn. So unfortunately, you know, those things happen. And now Brazil and the United States, I think both countries finding their best interest to make it a consequential relationship, because there is something very important. I think the World Cup will help in that sense, mm-hmm. You know, is to develop the relationship between those two societies, people-to-people relationship, students, businessmen, tourists, because it is in both countries' benefit to have a good dialogue, to have a consequential relationship between the two largest economies and the two largest democracy of the Americas.
Indeed. And before I turn to Sunny Young for the last word, we note that there will be a BRICS summit. Of course, Brazil is part of the BRICS. That is Brazil, Russia, India, South Africa, and China.
Yes, they will be there. The old leaders of the BRICS country have been invited to attend the final game of the World Cup. Obviously, we all hope that Brazil will be in the final, but that has to be decided yet. And then the leaders go to the city of Fortaleza in the northeast of Brazil for the summit. They will probably sign documents creating a BRICS development bank with a capital of maybe $50 billion. The BRICS have been instrumental in the beginning part of the reform of the international financial institutions that are based here in Washington. But for Brazil, probably the most promising long-term in terms of the political side of the BRICS, most likely is the relationship with India and South Africa, the other two democracies in the BRICS.
Well, now for the last word, Sunny Young, any additional comments with regard to this World Cup?
From a Brazilian perspective, we talked about the elections coming up, and right around the corner will be the Rio Olympics.
There you go.
In 2016, another big Brazilian sports party. So I know they have a lot on their mind in terms of the sporting calendar. The World Cup final will be played July 13th in Rio de Janeiro. And the Brazilian coach, Scolari, he has predicted, prior to the World Cup kicking off, a final between Brazil and neighbor Argentina. And if that was to take place, I think this World Cup is already setting records for viewership and people tuning in for matches. That final will absolutely set records. You have two of the marquee players in the world, Neymar for Brazil and Lionel Messi for Argentina. I think that would be a spectacular final should it take place. Predictions, I think if any European team can win on South American soil, Germany can do it. They're my pick among the Europeans. USA, hopefully, maybe make it to the quarterfinals. We'll see. So, yeah, I think it's been an exciting World Cup so far.
Well, on that positive note, I'm afraid that's all the time we have on this edition of Encounter. I'd like to thank my guest, Paulo Sotero, director of the Brazil Institute at the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars, and, of course, Sunny Young, host of our own Sunny Side of Sports. Muito obrigada. And, of course, may the best team win. I suppose Paulo is rooting for Brazil. Am I right?
Yes, I am. And even though, you know, the Pope is Argentine, we fear that he may not be neutral in his prayers. And he knows what he's praying about. Pope Francisco he's a great soccer fan.
Indeed. Well, I wouldn't mind myself if Algeria or Nigeria, as a tribute to our large African audience, would come through. But that's probably a long shot. Encounter was produced in Washington. Thanks to Anna Zalewski and Katie Espelita for booking our guests. Our engineer was Justin Thwaites, and I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Encounter on The Voice of America.
Put your flags up in the sky. In the sky.